what is it? It's September 13th in the year of your Lord 2017. And finally got, hold on. Testing. I know it's not appropriate to say testing while I'm live, but like I said, you know, I don't know who. I guess I'll go check the schedule and see who's the show that comes on before mine. I know they have a show. What is it? Tuesday. Some of these guys, weirdos, come in here 3, 4, 5 a.m. doing a show. Who's listening to radio 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning? I don't know. Maybe y'all, because people ain't listening to me at 7 in the morning. So I don't know. I can't hate. But, you know, Q4 Radio family, man, reset the boards. I don't know what y'all coming in here playing y'all ambient, zoned out, space, weed, cyberhead music. You know, I don't judge you. But don't be, you know, turning all the damn knobs, man. I just do a talk show. So I don't need all them special effects and strobe lights. You know, y'all come in here with your Hennessy bottles and all that and trying to, you know, do donkey of the day. I don't know. I don't judge. I tune in sometimes. Some of it's good. Some of it's peculiar. But I just want to ask the Q4 Radio family, Q4.org, broadcasters, you know, please just reset. Leave things like you found them. I know y'all got home training. As hood as y'all believe, I'm pretty sure most of y'all came up suburban, middle class, upbringing, two-parent households. As hood and gully as y'all like to act, y'all know y'all had some home training. You know your mother wouldn't put up with this. You know. You know what my teacher used to say, act like your mama work here? I don't know if that's the saying. She said something, act like your mama works here, and you don't want your mama having to pick up after. I don't know. That doesn't sound right to me, but that's something what I seem to remember. That I used to hear at Knott's Elementary School. Or no, they used to say your mama don't work here. That's what they used to say. My sixth and fifth grade teachers. Your mama don't work here. Therefore, there's nobody here that cares enough about you to want to clean up behind you or fix your messes. So you got to do it for yourself. So just Q4 Radio broadcast. If it applies, if the shoe fits, wear it. If the shoe don't fit, if you throw a rock into a group of huddled up dogs, the one that screams is the one that got hit. Your mamas don't work here. And my mama don't work here. So don't none of our mamas work here, unless your mother does work here. And if she does, no insult to her. It's a fine institution, Q4 Radio and Q4.org. But if your mama don't work here, I'm assuming most of our mothers don't work here. So clean up after your doggone selves. And by cleaning, I don't just mean cleaning. I mean in terms of the SAM system, the broadcast system, in terms of the soundboard, in terms of the various apps and programs that y'all use. You know, shut it all down. Log off. Yeah, that's another thing. When I come in, you know, people's emails and Facebook accounts is all open on this computer that's used by dozens of various people every day. I'm going to start sliding into DMs under your name. Then y'all probably like that. Like I said, some peculiar people, you know, radio people can be peculiar people. So I'm not going to do that because then benefiting from my skills that I can't even benefit from no more. So I ain't going to slide. But I'm going to figure something out to teach y'all a lesson. I'll figure something out. I'm just asking so I don't have to embarrass myself trying to go live on the air and stuff ain't sounding right and I'm looking incompetent. I don't mind being incompetent. I just don't want to look incompetent. So please, that's it. I don't even know what's left to talk about. Pissed off. Anyhow, I just got a recommendation to send a memo. Sis, I can't send. This ain't that type of party. This ain't that type of hierarchical structure. It ain't that type. I don't know what memos will do. You know, people just write tags on it, blow their noses. I don't know. I haven't yet to get a memo. This is a more, I don't know what you call it, organic space where we talk to one another. We, you know, I'd be better off sending out vibrational frequencies of frustration than sending a memo. I don't even know where. Do we even have sticky post? I don't know. I just rant and complain. You know, stop with the, Well, I would like to get to the topic. Maybe if you stop giving me unsolicited business consulting, perhaps I could get to my topic. Talking about send a memo. I don't even know if we got paper in this place or pencils. You know, we got microphones and headsets and inflated egos. That's all we have in the storeroom. You know, this, like I said, this is a not-for-profit, underground, progressive, ultra-left institution. So, you know, it don't work right like it's supposed to. But, I mean, we make it happen. We do what we got to do. Anyway, like I said, Q4 Radio, this might be my last day on the air. Soon as somebody listens to this. 312-985-7834 if you want to call in and holler at your boy. There's a few things I wanted to talk about. I don't know. Y'all want to talk about one thing that has disturbed me is all this talk about HAARP. And way back when I was in high school, I read this book called Angels Don't Play This HAARP. And they said in the Alaskan wilderness, there's this weather control and weather modification machine that white people that, you know, the elites, the reptilian overlord, Masonic, demonic baby killers, the people who run the world, the Illuminati, has weather machines, and they can control the weather and direct and create everything from monsoons to tornadoes to hurricanes to droughts to flooding. And they have the ability at this HAARP facility that interacts with certain satellites. Now, it didn't go into the specific technology, and it didn't give specific examples. And it was a lot of, like, just utter, you know, techno babble and pseudoscience. And I was like, well, this is interesting. And at that time, especially in the 80s and 90s, the U.S. and the Soviet Union, it went from the Soviet Union to the Russian Republic. And like I said, this year is the 100th anniversary of the Communist Revolution. So congratulations. Shout out to Karl Marx, Frederick Engels. Shout out to Joseph Stalin and the man who truly should go down in history as the one who defeated Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Vladimir Trotsky. All of you, shout out to them, to them white. But they tried to bring basic, you know, humanity to Europeans. They did their darndest. You know, it was a task that you know, a basic economic system based on cooperation and sharing, something that most of the world figured out without having to write books and fight multiple wars. We just did it. But, you know, they got their own way of going about things. So, long story short, 100-year anniversary of the Bolshevik uprising. We're really not. It's the most Mensheviks. I mean, there's so many layers to that, because it's been the history of the communist revolution has been so distorted because it's been written and told to us by capitalists. The winner's right. So they're going to lie, say Stalin killed everybody in Russia, and the people he didn't kill, he sent to Siberia, and all these. I mean, they just told a lot of lies. And we saw, oh, you know, what? But anyway, back to HAARP. And so people are thinking, we got hurricanes, we got wildfires, and so it's HAARP. And it's almighty whitey deciding to just flood his own cities, to flood his own refinery platforms and extraction platforms, and to disrupt his own economy. And for why? The white man works in mysterious ways. Because I'm like, you know, there's a thing we have to look at, which is something if we have an opportunity to get into the what is it, like the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 conspiracy. Means, motive, and opportunity. MMO. Means, motive, and opportunity. Now, here's the problem with this whole HAARP thing. Number one, it's just not true. There's but what I was going to say before I got into the Soviet Union is that the U.S. and the Soviet Union / Russian Republic, because remember, the U.S. was doing negotiations with the Soviet Union, and then they had Boris Yeltsin, that alcoholic maniac who blew up the Soviet Union. one of the worst people. I don't know. I think he should go down. I think, you know, I was a big fan of the Soviet Union. I'm in favor of a multipolar world, if not just a bipolar world. But if you were around back then, remember when we were under the threat of the Iron Curtain, the evil empire, the nuclear umbrella of the Soviet, you know, fifth columnists. Remember, there was less warfare. There was less poverty. There were fewer conflicts because there was a counterbalance to Western capitalist power. Now, Western capitalist power is unchecked. There's no real challenge to it. And so now the world is, you know, things are worse now than when there was a counterbalance, when the corrupt African oligarchs or the corrupt Latin American oligarchs could say, hey, if we don't like what we're hearing from the U.S., we could go to the Soviets, because they can give us funding and weapons, or you can. And so the so-called third world or developing nations were able to play these two powers off of each other. And every now and then there'd be some trickle down to the people. And the capitalists told us, once we overthrow the Soviet Union, once we fight back the communists, then you'll have peace, prosperity, and wealth for everyone, because the world would be capitalist. But now we know for a fact that a capitalist world means massive poverty, perpetual warfare, utter ecosystem collapse, and all the horrible things that the communists, the socialists, the anarchists all told us would happen. Everything they said, but nobody wants it, because they didn't say God told them and it was prophecy. They just was like, no, we're just studying historical patterns. We're just looking at, you know, scientific method, and we're applying it. You know, we're looking at political science. We're looking at history, peer-reviewed journals. And so since they're explaining this stuff that would happen, but nobody listened to them because they didn't come and say, I'm speaking the word of God and I'm bringing you a prophecy about the future. You know, that's what Marx probably said. Jesus told me that the workers should own the means of production. Then maybe somebody would have listened to him. Anyway, the Russia/Soviet, the Soviet Republic, formerly the empire formerly known as the USSR, was negotiating with the United States, saying that we will not engage in weather modification or weather manipulation as a weapon. So basically there was a treaty. So people assumed that because these two giant white empires said we're not going to do this, they assumed they must have the capabilities to do it, or else why would they have to say they won't do it? You know, that's kind of like when these little stupid backward hick towns in Iowa pass a city council resolution stating that they ban Sharia law. As if, you know, Sharia law is coming to some hick town in Iowa. So when people say that, oh, the Iowan, bubble butt Iowa has banned Sharia law, and then the rednecks are like, oh, Lord, thank Jesus. They must have been on their way to bring Sharia law here, or else why'd they have to ban Sharia law? It's just a jibber jabber. It doesn't mean anything. There was no Sharia law on coming to Iowa, but they banned it. So when the Soviet Union and Russian diplomats said, you know, let's agree not to engage in weather manipulation or weaponization of weather modification technology. So U.S. is like, yes, let's agree to this. I'll agree to anything, since I'm an unscrupulous rogue nation. The United States empire is unscrupulous. They will agree to anything. Marshmallow fluffs and unicorn and corn puffs. The United States will sign off on anything and then just do what they want to do anyway. Look at the nuclear test ban treaty on the rights of children, on the UN resolution on the rights of immigrants, just the fundamental charter of the UN, no aggressive warfare. Every single, and from all the Native American treaties, everything the U.S., from the basic U.S. Constitution, the fundamental laws of the land, you know, the U.S. will violate its violators, you know. So, yeah, you can sit down and negotiate almost anything. Civil rights, you want the right to vote? You coloreds want the right to vote? Sure. Where you want me to write? Here's an amendment for you. Shove it up your ass, because the U.S. will say one thing and do another. It's not even Machiavellian. It's pure brutal. It's Neanderthalism. You know, it's parasitism. So, yeah, anyway, they sat down and signed this treaty, which sent a lot of people in the 80s and 90s thinking, wow, the U.S. and Soviet Union must have the power to manipulate the weather. Now, here's the catch on that. There's an element of truth to that. And as Kwame Ture stated, a half-truth is more dangerous than a full lie. Because any lie that has any element of truth in it, then people will cling to that little kernel of truth and in order to justify the whole big lie. That's what propaganda is. Good propaganda doesn't just come out and straight up tell a bold-faced lie. Propaganda, you know, peppers its lies with truth. Indoctrination and, you know, the United States. So here's the thing. Human activity, human inputs has greatly influenced weather. So look at it like this. You can start a fire, but you can't control a fire. So yes, you can go into the forest and start a wildfire. And I could point to you and say, hey, this arsonist started this fire. But you can't say, okay, the fire, I want you to consume this particular valley. I want you to consume this particular row of homes. And then I want you to withdraw to this particular line and stay within. So you can cause a fire, but you can't control a fire. Now, what HAARP suggests is that not only can they cause the weather, they can control the weather. And neither one of those are true. Humans yet to have. Now, we all know about cloud seeding. Now, humans have been influencing and impacting the weather since the very primitive time, since we first harnessed the power of fire. You know, human technology could be called Promethean, which means we burn stuff. That's how we do. Your car burns fuel. Your house burns fuel. In order to make stuff, it's burning. It's hot, very hot technology. Right now, one of the biggest scientific areas of exploration is cold fusion. How can we generate energy without burning? How can we generate energy without burning something off? Even if you're using solar arrays to capturing that hot energy from the sun. So, you know, even with the windmills, what's the technology and the amount of carbon that goes into making these silicone and the ball bearings, the steel ball bearings and the large plastics? Oh, that's carbon intensive. So even for sustainable energy, it's high carbon inputs. So we have to understand that it's not as simple as I see a lot of patterns of bad weather. We got wildfires in the northeast of the United States, northwest. We got droughts in the southwest. We got tornado alleys Kansas, Oklahoma's, Arkansas, Missouri. We got tornadoes and flash floods. Everybody know about the hurricanes running up the East Coast throughout the Gulf of Mexico, Syria, the Middle East, drought, Africa, everything from mudslides to severe drought to flooding. So it's very easy to think the white man, almighty whitey. But then again, you look at where the white man rest. Europe. They've had thousands of deaths over the last, you know, from 2000 to 2010. They had record numbers of deaths from people suffering from heat stroke because Europe is burning up. So here's the bottom line about that. Humanity, white people. And let me just say this before I say that. This is all white folks' fault. Now, when white people were going about the world during the age of exploration and bringing civilization and the light of Christ to the rest of humanity, they weren't trying to share none of the glory. They went places and they built these big statues to Columbus. They staked their European, Spanish, Portuguese, French, German, who else? Dutch. They went and stuck these flags all over the world and were like, we did it. And they had sayings like the sun never sets on the British Empire, or they had this rhetoric about the white man's burden to bring light to humanity. And it was all white man thumping his chest. He barely gave a white woman credit, even though she was banging. She was a roller. Boy, she kept a gun in her purse in case Whitey got searched. She was a down ride or die chick. White women, shout out to you. From the white man, I know he don't give you enough credit, but I give you all the credit you deserve for your role you played in building global white domination. Now, when he was doing this, he was like, it's me, my, I. It was all pronouns like me, myself, and I. But now that the full-on ecological, economic, cultural consequences from having this metastatic viral culture imposed on all of humanity, now that we're faced with the consequences, population overreach, peak resources, global warming, global nuclear and chemical contamination, now they want to say, oh, this is a human issue. Now they want to back away from their triumphant conquest of the world. Now they want to say, oh, humanity is greedy. Humanity did this. Humanity. And I'm sick of that. And because the worst thing about it is not the fact that white folks now want to share the credit when they took all the credit and took all the money and resources, took all the power, but they want to spread the blame around for the state of the world, for that we ain't going to have no more coral reefs, ocean acidification, and the death, 90% of death of all the complex life forms in the ocean. Now he wants to spread that around. He didn't spread around the power. He didn't spread around the resources. He didn't spread around ownership of the land and industry. But he wants to spread the blame. See, this is a mankind thing. You know, I had a white dude. I had to block this white dude all in my grill. He's trying to compare the Zulu Empire to the British Empire. And I asked this hillbilly, hey, where the hell are they speaking Zulu outside of Zululand? Outside of South Africa, where are they worshiping Zulu gods? Because I can show you outside of Europe where they speak in European languages and worshiping European gods and writing in European scripts and following European protocols and mores. I can show you way outside of Europe. So if you're comparing the Zulu imperialism to European imperialism, show me where they intersect. You're going to compare a leather shield and a spear to a damn nuclear bomb? Get the hell out of my face with that. But that's what they want to do now. So now, and we so damn integrationists as black people. We so want to be acknowledged and rub shoulders, elbows, and asses with white folks. We're taking the blame. You got black people talking about, yeah, what's wrong with us? Us? Like Malcolm X said over half a century ago, I hear some Negro talking about our astronauts. They don't even let us near the plane. And then we talk about our astronauts, our country, our destruction of the ecosystem, our global warming. That ain't us. Even you Negroes out here flying in shuttles and mining coal. It ain't because you want to do it. It ain't something that you set up. That's something you were coerced into. So as we are facing the consequences, I'm all for it. I know we got to deal with it. It's on us as hard as anybody else. But one thing I will not do, which I can't stop the rest of y'all, but I wish y'all stop doing, is taking blame for this. Say, and at least tell the white man, you Uncle Tom integrationist new Negroes, at least tell the white man, if you want me to share the blame, I want to share some of the money, I want to share some of the power, I want to share some of the territory. I want to share, if I'm going to share the blame for killing the planet, let me share some of the spoils that you garnered and amassed from killing the planet. But y'all don't even want that. Y'all don't even ask for that. So don't come to me with no mankind. Which one? What kind of man? Which one? Name them. You name it. Europeans, whitey, hungry, cracker, you name it. Hey, it's a lot of names for them. But this is the white man's fault. And I know we so sophisticated. We so together. We can't blame the white man. Y'all personal responsibility takers. I'd like to, boy, hey, y'all out here, we don't have to take responsibility. Y'all out here got the nerve, the gall to be complaining about black people looting. Only time I get mad at a black person for doing a crime is when they get caught. There's two things. There's only two crimes a black person can commit, and that's a crime against another oppressed person or getting caught. Now, if your criminality is in any way harming another oppressed person, not just black, but Native Americans, there's a lot of oppressed people. So, you know, you got to step real careful. If you're going to be a gangster, you're going to be a criminal, you got to step lightly. But my only two things is don't don't hurt other oppressed people, and don't get caught. That's the only thing that makes me mad. Other than that, loot away. If you can get away with it, even if it ain't no flood, even if it ain't no riot, if you and your goons can get together and run up in some corporate, you know, mass produce, you up in that, man, and what's that dude's name? I'm going to have to find this dude. I'm going to have to, the new Negro self-exposure protocol needs to be something real. We need to make this real. We need a database. There's some Uncle Tom, Dre Lee Will, D-R-E space L-E-E space W-I-L-L. And I will be posting his name, and because this is the new Negro self-exposure protocol. Needs to be, I'm about to live it. I ain't got to talk it. I'm going to live it. Got the gall to be mad that black folks is running up in Foot Locker in Houston and in Miami getting them some sneaks. Now, he ain't mad that the shoes were made in the third world country with often child labor or oppressed women labor made by people who have no labor standards. He ain't mad that they send the shoes to these poor communities and mark them up. Sometimes the markup can be literally 12,000% markup. It could cost them $15, not just to make the shoes, not $15 worth of materials, but from no shoe to shoe, including the advertising cost, paying LeBron James to chase balls with the shoes on, paying these degenerate druggy rappers to wear the shoe and flaunt around to promote them to our young people, the promotional cost, the transportation, the storage, warehousing, the distributions, all of that, $15, $20 per shoe at the most. You paying $220 for the shoe. That don't make this punk mad, this dude, man. Let me not call this dude out his name. He's a new Negro. He's worked hard to be a good new Negro. I'm going to call him. And mama named him new Negro. I'm going to call him what he is. This new Negro's outraged. Outraged. And that's not even getting into the externalities of the shoe industry. All of the pollutions and toxins that go into to making shoes that the shoe companies do not have to pay for. They are not responsible for. Now, if I paint my house or paint my living room, which I recently did, and if I took that paint and poured it in the local sewer or took that paint to the lakeshore and poured it in the lake, I would go to jail or I would get a serious fine. If not, or both, fine and prison. But if I build a huge factory, or if I have a huge hog farm, and I dump literally metric tons of toxic waste into the waterway or into the atmosphere, it's nothing. I get a check from the government. I get subsidies and support from the government because I am a job creator. So he's not outraged about that. That you look at your shoes, made in Bangladesh, made in China, made in Haiti, made in Vietnam. As if homies, like I said, homies here can't make shoes. Why they make it over there? Because they can exploit the people and exploit the ecosystem. Those young women have to come to work in diapers because they can't get restroom breaks. That don't outrage this punk. But he's mad that black folks is kicking in the door. I would prefer that the shoes be free. I would prefer. If I go up to a young man and say, hey, young brother, you got on those $100 Air Jordans. Jordan don't give a damn about the community. Jordan ain't put nothing into the community. And then we got other higher priorities than buying these damn shoes, my brother. And he says, hey, chill. I stole these. And I'm like, oh, I apologize. I owe you a sincere apology. Good job, young man. Carry on. That's what I would say. But this Dre Tom would be like, how dare you? Now you march right into to Foot Locker. You march right up to Nike Inc. In one of the, and they set up in a racist city. Ain't they in Seattle? You go to one of the many mansions of Philip Knight, the multi-billionaire, former CEO of Nike. You march up to one of his mansions and you knock on his door and you say, here's that $220 I owe you, Philip Billionaire Knight. And I apologize. That's what he would have him do. But anyway, what that got to do with HARP and weather modification? I'm just saying, blame whitey. This is all white folks. It's our responsibility, but it's their fault. Now, just because something isn't your fault doesn't mean that you can abdicate responsibility for addressing it. Because not only does it affect us, it will affect our descendants. So I'm all for black folks taking responsibility to prepare ourselves and to engage and address this. I'm completely against us, not only us taking blame for this or us refusing to point the finger. Point your finger, point your rulers, point your pistols or whatever you have to point with. I ain't telling you what to do, just how to do it. Point whatever you be pointing at the culprits, the Koch brothers, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Microsoft, all of them. I can give you names. These people got names, faces, addresses, agendas. I'm so sick of this mankind. I don't come to me with that. Man has destroyed his environment. Man ain't destroyed nothing. The white man has either directly destroyed the environment or coerced nations and continents full of people to engage in commerce development that they otherwise most likely would not have engaged in. I don't know of any race of people, except maybe the Mongolians, that went into Europe and was like, teach me your ways. Nobody volunteered for this. So anyway, let's get back to the real deal. Human activity that the white man forces the rest of humanity to do, and there were several people all over the world that were like, yo, I don't want to have a laissez-faire decentralized economy. I don't want technological development. I don't want to live within an economy. Our people live within the ecology. I don't want to set up so that I can consume and live beyond the constraints of my local ecosystem. Thanks, but no thanks. And the white man was like, oh, you don't? And it's like, and another thing, I don't want to pray to your gods. I don't want to wear your clothes. I don't want none of that. You're welcome to come here and visit, even with your disease pestilence breathing on us. You're welcome to come sit at the beach, sip some coconut water, then take your ass home. And don't dock your ships too close, because then you're going to infest with rats. They were told that. And what did the white man do everywhere that he was told this? He was like, oh, okay, all right. Then he went back to the boat and got his muskets, his cannons, his sabers, depending on which, whether it was the Portuguese or the Spanish or the British or the German or the French, or the depending on which group of white folks invaded your land, they would go back and get their weapons and kill everybody until you were like, fine, civilize me. Where do I pray? Okay, Jesus Christ, do I bow to the east? Because the Arab did it too. Do I bow to the cross, bow to the east? Can I eat pork? Do I have to stop eating pork? Tell me what to do, because you're killing everybody. You know, that's what this is, global gangbanging. You either in or you out. Like, you in the European capitalist gang, or you part of the food chain. So they force this on everybody. So human activity being a Promethean culture, we have what is called the carbon cycle. Carbon is absorbed, it is fixed, it is emitted. Then reabsorb, fixed, emitted, absorb, fixed. And this happens through several ways, through flatulence, through digesting food, through burning things, through natural fires or controlled burns or your campfire. You had the carbon cycle. But there became where the, through industrial development, where the emission of carbon outpaced the reabsorption and fixing of carbon. And carbon is what they call one of the greenhouse gases. The two top greenhouse gases is methane and carbon. So they burn a lot of carbon through artificial means, through internal combustion engines, the cars, through industrial production, a lot of heat, burning stuff in factories. You see the smokestacks all over in the industrial, but I guess we don't see them anymore because y'all mad. They took your jobs. They took our jobs overseas, and the jobs they left behind, the Mexicans snatched up. I know how it goes, and I feel for you, good or godly Americans, such victims. And so, basically, there's more carbon being emitted than there is being absorbed, so the balance is off. So we have now the greenhouse effect, where much of the solar energy that reaches the Earth is not allowed to escape back into the stratosphere, into outer space. So the Earth is getting hotter, and it's getting hotter because of industrial development. Right? So that's it. And so human beings, i.e. white people, did this. And they all, look at the Chinese are the top carbon emitters. The Chinese didn't want no parts of this. But the Chinese figured out either I become the white man or I will be the white man's victim. Go look at the Boxer Rebellion. Go look at the Chinese Rebellion. Go look at the Opium Wars. The Chinese were like, listen, we have our way of being. We have our way of living. And the Europeans were like, nope, that's not good enough. Get with the program. And so they were like, I could either become them. If you can't beat them, join them. So Chinese carbon, you know, China is still building, what, 1,200 freaking coal-burning plants a year? Nuclear power. And yeah, they're doing solar energy, wind, and geothermal, and tide, capturing, you know, those tide turbine things, whatever. I forgot the name for them. All that other stuff. But they still like, listen, we have to develop. They done caught the bug. And then we got some supposedly conscious black people running around. We need to be like the Chinese. Jay-Z told us to be like the Jews. You know, we got other people telling us to be like the Chinese. And then you notice nobody says be telling black folks to be like the Japanese anymore. But back in the 90s, if you're a little older, millennials, we always running in behind somebody else's ass. They don't even have ass. Most of the people we run in behind got flat butts. If we wanted to run in behind somebody's ass, we should run in and behind each other's asses. At least you know where you go. Wait, let me get off that. All I'm saying is, every time you turn around, you're finding somebody telling black folks to be like somebody else. The Chinese did it. We need to make our own Chinatown. We need to be like China. Look at China as an economic powerhouse. And but back then, they used to tell us to be like the South Koreans. Look at Koreans. Koreans come to our communities. Koreans this, And they just like, listen, you listen. All of them are parasites. South Korea and Japan are parasitic economies. I'm sorry. And when you look at China, they look, China was basically like, we will be the Santa Claus little tinker factory. China said, we will be the elves of industrial capitalism. And China will be evil, capitalist, racist, imperialist Santa Claus workshop. And we will make all your shallot shooters and all your plastic buttons for your shirts that you bust open from eating this toxic food. So when you bust your shirt open, consuming everybody else's resources and get morbidly obese, we'll make you more buttons and we'll starch and iron and let out your shirts. So it was a good deal for a while. But when you look at China's ecosystem, when you look at China's internal turmoil, China, you think, you know, there's a riot here, a Baltimore riot. They still talking about the L.A. riots. 1992, Rodney King riots. Wow, there was a riot. You know, they got like 10,000 riots a year, urban uprisings and rural uprisings a year in China. Because the Chinese people, I know in the United States, we love to pretend like every Chinese is a violin playing math whiz economic genius. But no, everybody ain't balling. So you want to bring that system where we have a few oligarchs in Africa? We already got that. We ain't got the skyscrapers and the neon, but who needs it when you got the money and you got the higher the economic discrepancies? Where you got a few rich and a whole bunch of everybody else struggling, thinking they could be rich. It's like, ooh, I can work. Who wants to work hard to be a tapeworm, a damn parasite feeding off the blood and misery of everyone else? But that's what they tell us to do. Be like China. Why can't we just be Africans? We got to be like China, you know, be like Chinatown, be like the Koreans, be like the Japanese. And I'm sure the Japanese were like, no, son, don't be like me. You know, I nuked myself worse than the white man nuked me. It's like, oh, no, my either the white man's going to nuke you or you nuke your damn self. Take your pick. That's not, I don't want neither option A nor B. Fukushima, China. I mean, just, and it's not even that. The culture, the very psychology of the Japanese people has been destroyed because they played the white man's game. Industrial, and China got a whole bunch of, Japan's got a lot of skyscrapers and neon. Its economy has been stagnant for the last 20 years. And yeah, y'all love y'all Toyotas and stuff, and there are some oligarchs, Japanese oligarchs balling out, but the Japanese people, man, it ain't all good. And a lot of people get to wanting to go return to the old ways, even in Russia, even in Mother Russia. They had their flirtation with capitalism, and they are like, let's go back to communism. The Ukrainians, you know, the people in the Stan nations, the Baltic nations. You know, oh, let's go capitalism. What they have, ethnic conflicts. And war and conflict and war and more conflict. So anyway, through our own actions, which were coerced, that we were forced into taking as a result of being captured, colonized, invaded, oppressed, dictated to, dominated by the West and their death urge culture, human beings are emitting excess methane and carbon into the atmosphere. As a result, the planet is warming. And this we know as a Promethean technology. When you light a fire under something, when you warm things up, they get faster. They expand. They become intense. So now with a hotter climate, hotter oceans, hotter air, there's more evaporation. There's more moisture in the atmosphere. And it's got to go somewhere. What goes up must come down. So you not only do you have more precipitation, more rain, more wetness from the monsoons and the hurricanes and the rainy season, it's more intensified. The winds are stronger. The winds are stronger. So this is a supercharged planet. So the man, hurricanes have always been with us. Always. But the frequency and intensity is what the global warming is doing. Global warming is causing increased frequency of extreme weather and more intense extreme weather. You feel me? You hear, you see what I'm saying? So there is a man component of it. Man is causing it, but man is not controlling it. Man is not making hurricanes. He's not no hurricane and then voila, turn on the heart machine, do the foot pump, tell the little gerbil to run on the wheel, voila, hurricane where there was no hurricane. No. But due to not even someone sitting around saying, I want to make a hurricane. What's causing a hurricane? When you take your ass to McDonald's or you go to the grocery store and you buy some beef, you buy some pork, you buy some chicken. When you get in your car to drive to your job that you're coerced to work, but you convince yourself that it's a blessing and an opportunity to have this. When you engage in your wage slave, you go about your wage slave job. When you go to the store and you buy your bling bling, when you buy your sweatshop manufactured shoes instead of stealing them because you're a good Negro like Will want us to be. When you do all of that, you are a part of HAARP. You are contributing to the carbon cycle. You are expanding what we has come to be called your carbon footprint. When you fly to the Caribbean and ball out for the gram, that flight adds to your carbon footprint. When you eat non-locally produced food, when you drive your car instead of taking public transportation, a bike or walking, all of that adds to the carbon. So you are as much a part of HAARP. HAARP is our lifestyle. Our lifestyle is unsustainable, and it leads to the high-level emissions of carbon, which is a greenhouse gas, and methane, which is 10 times more of a greenhouse gas than it stays in the atmosphere longer. And methane, what's the number one source of methane? Animal flatulence, which sounds goofy. But when you go and you just go to the Google machine and put in feedlots and you see hectares and hectares and hectares of heads of cattle, millions of heads of cattle being fed the soybeans that they grew from cutting down the rainforest. And when you cut down trees, because trees, the ocean is a carbon sink. But when you warm up the ocean, it becomes a carbon emitter. The tundra is a methane and carbon, the permafrost, ice caps. Those are methane and carbon banks. When they start to met, one thing that used to capture and hold carbon will now release carbon. And it's melting due to human activity. So humans, instead of dealing with the reality, because if I say it's a white man in rural Alaska pushing buttons, causing hurricanes, then I can go and eat my fried chicken, wear the Nikes that I paid top dollar for, and fly to the Caribbean to ball out for the gram, and it ain't my fault, because this whitey up in doing HAARP up in Alaska. But if I say, no, my very lifestyle, the very way that I sustain myself, I entertain myself, I enjoy myself, I ball out and attract members of the opposite sex, the very way that I live and enjoy my life is a factor, is a contributing factor. You know, the money that I go and like I follow, I listen to 444. And so I go get credit and I buy stock. So I got stock in Raytheon. I got stock in BP and Sam. So I own stocks and shares in these multinational corporations. So I'm profiting from the destruction of the world's ecosystem. So if I could say it's that, then that means I got to make some changes. You know, maybe I got to adopt a vegan diet. Maybe I need to start being more conscientious of how I consume and the waste I produce and how I entertain myself. Maybe I don't ball out into the Caribbean. Instead of buying a plane ticket to ball out for the gram in the Caribbean, maybe I send some funds to Haiti to help rebuild and reforest Haiti. Take that plane ticket money, one less stamp on my passport, but I'll plant, you know, a dozen trees for my brothers and sisters in Haiti, without whom we'd still be in shackles. But if I could just sit back and say it's a white man in rural Alaska pushing buttons that's causing all this, that absolves you. And it's a pretty crap. And not only is it stupid, it makes you look damn stupid. It's just, you know, let me not call you stupid. That's not right. Some for us, let me say willfully ignorant. Because, I mean, if people who don't know, it's because they don't want to know. Maybe it's good. And if you don't know, now you know. And if you don't want to know, because you don't want to know. A lot of ignorance is willful in this day and age. You know, remember that song from the Weeds? Don't nobody bring me no bad news, no bad news, no bad news, no bad news, no, but don't nobody bring me no bad news. Then we don't want to hear it. Even when we hear bad news, we want to hear bad news that absolve us of any culpability. So we like, the black family is being destroyed. And a brother could be like, what? That's bad news. So if I'm going to tell a black man that the black family is struggling, then I got to tell him the cause of that destruction is something that absolves him. Why is the black family being destroyed? Because of these black women ain't no good. Well, I'm not a black woman. So it's bad that the black woman's being destroyed, but I'm absolved of that. So I can lament and weep and wail, oh, the black family, I love, we need strong black. I can advocate for the black family. I can talk all this black family mess. But because I've put the cause, since I've misdiagnosed the source of the disease, of the problem, I'm free and safe. So people will listen to bad news if you tell them bad news that absolve them of any guilt. In fact, that makes them part of the guilty party. You know. If you tell white folks, jobs, we don't have jobs. And white man's like, oh, we don't have jobs. Now, you can't tell a white man you ain't got jobs because you're racist. And your racist public policy and your racist voting record, voting for dog whistle racist Republicans who have strip mined the economy and globally the neocon economics, neoliberalism, laissez-faire capitalism. No, it's like, why don't I have jobs? Is it not because of my own racism and ignorance? No, I don't have a job because of the damn Mexicans. Those damn Chineses. So that's how it works. So if people are like, I don't like this weather, that's bad news, but it's HAARP. Oh, okay. I can get with that. So I go down and get on the internet and drop knowledge about HAARP. And they got all kind of images of HAARP. They got these voting, these weather platforms and say, that's HAARP. They've got some way stations, some damn cell towers. That's HAARP. All these images of, just go look it up. And I wish it was that simple. The white man got a weather machine in Alaska. If we can get up there and unplug it, then the planet stabilizes. I wish a lot of nonsense that y'all said. I wish all of our problems was women and gays, because I'm not a woman or a gay, so that leaves me triumphant. I wish y'all were right. Hey, HAARP, I wish y'all were right about that. I'd love to get with y'all on that. But, I mean, we got it in order to cure something. You know, like if you walk into the doctor's office and say you got cancer. Oh, no. Where did I get cancer? Because of all these haters out here. They see how baller you are and they jealous of you. They hating on you. That's where your cancer came from. It's hater cancer. You be like, yep. And then you pop your collar like, yep. Oh, that make you feel good even though it's bad news. But it's just not true. They could say maybe it's your diet. It's your lifestyle. You know, your sedentary lifestyle and your standard American diet is why you have cancer. Then that puts it all back on your shoulders. You can't point fingers. You can't pop your collar. So I'm just saying, we're adults. Let's be adults. Yes, there are a lot of fingers to point. We can't point at HAARP, but we can point at the Koch brothers. We can point fingers at Barack Hussein Obama. Some of y'all like that. Some of y'all don't. But Obama did everything to preserve the fossil fuel industry, the U.S. auto industry. Obama bailed out the auto industry, and Obama could have easily said to the auto industry, listen, y'all going to make solar panels. Y'all going to make solar panels and no more cars. unless, or I'm going to increase fuel efficiency standards. Every car needs to get 300 miles to a gallon, or you can't manufacture it. Or I'm just going to say the number one car buyer in the country is the U.S. government and the U.S. military. And so whatever they say a car must do and can't do, that's what all of our cars will do and won't do. And already in China, they got cars that get 100 miles to the gallon. U.S. fuel efficiency standards are a joke around the world. So there is a man-made. We live in what has now been called the Anthropocene. And anthro means man or hands. We live in a climate that has been constructed by human activity. Half of the humans, most of the humans, were coerced into doing this. So if I kick in your door and I put a gun to your head and say, hey, we about to go rob this station. And if you don't rob this station, I'm gonna shoot you. So I put a gun to your head and I tell you to walk into the bank and tell the lady in the bank, put $1,000 in this bag, and they catch us. They're gonna say you are a victim as much as the bank teller, even though you participated in the crime, you were coerced into participating at the crime. They would have killed you. I mean, we have a lot of cases like that where people are literally coerced or forced. Like you got a pimp and a prostitute situation. And a lot of times the woman is told, hey, if you don't get out here, turn these tricks, I will kill you. And so when they capture the pimp, they were like, oh, well, this woman was coerced. She was forced into this criminal activity. So she's not only not going to be charged with the crime, we're going to add additional crimes to the pimp. But I know y'all want to be equal. I want to be equal. My very mission in life, my very purpose for existence is to be equal with white folks. So if white folks is guilty of a crime, then I want to be guilty of that same crime. Go with God, your white God. I won't stop you. But I know I don't take no blame for it. I don't care if y'all see me driving a Hummer, eating a Big Mac, shooting a shotgun out the sunroof, screaming yeehaw with a Confederate flag tattoo on my forehead. It ain't my fault. I didn't drive my damn self crazy. The system did. So you infect me with a disease. It's your fault. You're the vector. And hey, thankfully, there are white people, prominent, educated, learned white men who are acknowledging this. Thank goodness. And I give their names out all the time. White anthropologists, scientists, engineers, social critics, even right-wing conservatives like Chalmers Johnson have admitted this. So this ain't just a crazy black man's ranting because I don't want to take no responsibility. I just want to make babies and not take care of them. And I don't want to blame the white man everything. Nope. My blame is very targeted and specific. I don't blame them for, like, dancing good. I don't blame them for stuff they don't do. I only blame them for what that could be confirmed that they're guilty. So that's that. So it is 8:01 in the a.m. broadcasting out of the sanctuary hypocrisy that is the city of Chicago, Chirac. And people get mad. People are still mad about the title of Chirac. And it's hot in here. Lord, have mercy. Pick the worst day to wear a kufi. Anyway, that's that. Yes, and we're going to be talking a lot about climate change and specific things we can do to prepare ourselves for the coming climate catastrophe. I guess some people can't even talk about preparation. They're going to be dealing with recovery. But you still got to prep even after your recovery. That ain't the end of it. That's just the beginning. So, I mean, I've been talking about climate change since the 90s. That's why I became a vegan for ecological purposes. Not because I wanted to levitate and be holier than thou. It was I became because I believed in animal rights and preserving the ecosystem. And I did want to bang on the systems of capitalism and industrial production and distribution systems, which is the real cause. But I'm thinking, well, I don't want to be hypocritical. What thing can I do to reduce my own carbon footprint? So I went out and bought a bike, which was an easy thing to do because I love riding bikes anyway. But I also went out and got off the swine and got refined. You know, the swine, the pig, off of all animal flesh and dairy and processed foods and all that, you know. So I've been screaming this since the 80s. Now people have joined me. I was a member of several black organizations. Sons of Man, National Black United Front, wanted to be a member of the Nation of Islam, but they wouldn't have me. And every time I go amongst these black organizations, 91, 92, 1998, 96, 2000, I've been in these various black organizations, and I'm always like, we got to deal with this ecology thing. We got to deal with this sustainability issue, holistic health. People like, what? You know, I've had people, prominent black folks, whose names I don't, because I just can't be bumping heads, tell me that was reactionary, or that's white stuff. Animal rights, that's white. We ain't with PETA and all that. So now, maybe now, finally, Dr. Umar will get some organic cotton suits and ties and get some vegan organic hemp-based shampoo for his beard grooming. Who knows? And be a good role model for our people. All these black folks in leadership positions will start promoting ecological and sustainable practices and start motivating our people to stand against the systems of capitalist and centralized production. You know, we'll basically promote the understanding that we need to live within the ecosystem limitations. We need to prioritize ecology over economy. Maybe Dr. Claude Anderson will stop trying to get black capitalism off the ground and start dealing with communal economics, local production. I'll fast and pray and keep jawboning about it and working towards it. But, you know, that's what we need. Our leaders are fighting a century-old fight. We still fight for economic opportunity. Yeah, what's economic opportunity when the air is unbreathable? You know, when your black business is under 10 feet of freaking sewage contaminated water. What kind of economic development you going to have under that? We need ecological preservation, not ecological development. Say it with me, church. We need ecological preservation, not more so than economic development. And any unsustainable economic development needs to be shunned by us. Y'all want to go to Africa and blanket it in neon and skyscrapers like South Korea and China and Japan? Don't do it. Just look at the Asian tiger economies. The white man is set up. He pulls the plug. He manipulates those economies at his whim. And the worst part of all of it, everybody don't ball like that. The wealth isn't spread. That's all I'm saying. Well, let's take a music break. I'm going to come again with Struggle Sounds. My brother, Sheun. So he insists. When you call him, when you meet the brother, you got to say, Sheun. Because that's how he wants us to pronounce his name. Fine. I prefer Seun. But he, Sheun, Kuti, and Egypt 80. Struggle Sounds. I'm going to take a little musical break. And then when we get back on the turnaround, we're going to deal with a few other issues that's been bugging me. And then we're going to get out of here, and I'm going to flip around. And then I'm going to hit y'all up for some money. Just saying, let me forewarn you, when I come back, I'm going to be telling y'all to go donate, to go to the Patreon account. You know, I'm hemorrhaging resources to do this show, and I can't. I've been doing it for over a year. I've been liberals hate? Subsidizing. No, not the liberals, the libertarians. I've been subsidizing the show, and people looking at me, like my wife and the other people I build and organize with, like, man, you know, this is starting to look like a kind of a vanity project, because it's not bringing in resources to sustain itself, let alone allowing us to build. So this Bro Diallo show needs to start bringing in enough resources to sustain the show and to funnel resources into our other efforts, or then again, it is a vanity project, which I, as vain as I am, can't afford to do. So y'all gonna have to kick in donations and spread the word, share the show, go to the archives, spread them around, the hashtag Bro Diallo or hashtag Bro Diallo show, help get the word out, promote. I don't have any corporate sponsors yet. I didn't send letters to Monsanto, Koch Brothers, and all of them. And for some reason, they won't give me money to rant against them. Go figure. But I can't even get these, like, progressive black businesses. But hey, ain't nobody blaming nobody. I do have one minor sponsor, the African World Coalition's Cooperative, African World Order. So they help support the show and are actually working with, because it's a cooperative enterprise. So the owner members of the cooperative are, we're actually collaborating and trying to work to get a TV show going. But it'll all be for naught if people don't kick in. But that we ain't dealing with that right now. DialoKenyatta.com, donate, Patreon supporter. We ain't dealing with that right now. I'll deal with that on the flippity. So let's just hear some struggle sounds, and I'll see y'all shortly. Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680 Q4 Radio, Chicago, Drillinoy.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now. Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people,
struggle now.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now. Struggle
now. This is the for the money. This
struggle for the people. The system for the money. Struggle for the people. The system say we different. The struggle make us one. The system not religion. We get spirituality. The system say we different. The struggle make us one. The system not religion. We get spirituality. They get the guns and them army, but still them the fear we. They get the guns and them army, but still them the fear me. My people, my mind, my struggle, my mission. My people, my mind, my struggle, my mission, yeah. My people, my mind, my mission, my struggle. Struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now. Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now.
Struggle music, struggle sound, struggle people, struggle now.
The moment I saw him speak on television, I said to myself, Elliot, what have you done? What are you doing? Because I felt that they would make him pay for that and pay dearly.
The first meeting of observers and inmates lasted almost till dawn. A public address system set up in the yard kept the 1,200 inmates informed.
And there was a sense of hope that for the first time there were some outsiders, people would now begin to listen, and hopefully some changes could be made.
On Saturday, the third day of the uprising, troopers surrounding the prison yard waited for a decision by the state. Using a video camera, they recorded the activities of the inmates.
And there is the ugliest, blackest Negro gentleman I've ever seen in my life. From that black outfit. Boy, when they painted him dark.
The man doing the speaking is wearing a bright red robe. He's just gotten several very loud responses from the crowd. Typical rabble-rouser type talk.
It was a good feeling, you know, and especially after we start dealing and start organizing and start talking about the conditions and start talking about why we were out there and start talking about the grievances and start talking about why we were rebelling and why rebellion was necessary, the feeling became more and more and more into me. And I start feeling a part of it more.
Ain't nothing dead about us. We ain't gonna die. Nothing.
We are not dying at all.
It was almost a community within a community. And it was somewhat very, very impressive that they had said, this is our home and we're now going to make it as livable as possible. And there was a tremendous amount of discipline there within the yard.
Families and friends of the hostages gathered outside the prison walls, waiting for news. Relatives and supporters of the inmates demonstrated nearby. That evening, the mood in the yard changed. William Quinn, a guard hurt in the initial takeover, had died in the hospital. Governor Nelson Rockefeller and Commissioner Oswald had earlier agreed to most of the demands concerning prison conditions, but rebelling inmates could now face murder charges unless amnesty was granted. The next day, state troopers moved into position to retake the prison, if ordered.
Time is 1:55 p.m. We're on the roof of C Block, looking at a detail of 270 marksmen with instructions to clear the catwalks upon command.
We thought that the situation reached crisis, that in fact there was about to be an attempt to retake the prison. We thought that there would be a lot of bloodshed. In fact, we said to the governor that if that happened, there would be a massacre. And his response was that basically that he sympathized with our position. He felt that everything had been done that could be done. He was very, anyone who remembers Governor Rockefeller will remember his effusive manner. And he was very, he thanked us greatly for our efforts and that sort of thing. But the net effect of it was that that he felt everything had been done that could be done. He could not grant amnesty and in fact said that even if I could, I wouldn't do it.
With negotiations deadlocked, inmates requested black and Latino reporters and a member of the establishment press. It was an attempt to speak directly to the public.
Y'all dudes running around here shooting that dope. Running around here shooting that dope. Getting high, raping them sisters, them white folks, and justifying it in the cause of revolution. Well, we're going to die here at Attica, today or tomorrow. And we ask you to get together, get our people together, and unite.
The people in here are treated like dogs. Not only the black, the Puerto Rican, and the white. And we're going to get what we demand, or we're going to die trying. Yes.
And I want you brothers to get together because we together here. And we, these people think we shucking and jiving, but we is for real.
All these dogs up there with all those rifles are trying to kill us. But we ain't going to quit. You know we're not. Why no, we're not going to quit? Because we're one. We're one unit. We're tired of being beaten. We're tired of being oppressed. We're going to get this. If we all have to die, all of us.
You are ready to die on
the down orders.
The hostages appealed to the state not to come in, not to kill, that the inmates' requests were right on that last day we were there. I mean, it was a very emotional kind of exchange from the hostages and from everyone.
I just hope that the commissioner and the other people in the committee that they've gathered together can come up with a solution to solve these people's problems and ours.
I'll tell you what I got to say. We've stood out here since Thursday, and my son is in there. Michael Smith is one of the hostages. I've talked to several of the other people here that have husbands in there, and some of the fathers. And I can't speak for all of them, but my feelings are this. You can only pacify a kid with a pacifier so long. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, we was led to believe that there was going to be a definite decision. They was going to bring them out. Now, damn it, I'll do it.
Monday morning, day 5. Commissioner Oswald demanded the immediate release of the hostages. In response, the inmates positioned 8 of the hostages on the catwalk. By their side stood inmates armed with knives and clubs, threatening to kill the hostages in case of an attack.
I was led blindfolded to the top of the catwalk. And I can recall when that helicopter flew overhead, besides being able to hear it, you could actually feel the concussion of the propellers from the helicopter overhead.
We knew that they were going to come in, but we never knew that they were going to come in there that way. That was really a big surprise, the way that they came in the yard. We thought they were going to come in there and knock some heads and bust some heads open and that kind of way. And once we start seeing the helicopters and they start shooting the gas pellets and I start seeing people getting open up with shotguns, you know, then I knew that they were really coming in there in a violent, violent way.
Has said that people are dying in there, and I agree with that. I think that there are people that are dying in there, and the scene is I'm going to cut this off. Helicopters are still flying overhead. It seems there was an announcement from the helicopter right above me to the inmates below that they should put their hands on their heads and come out. I don't know well, anyone has died inside. And I'm upset. This is unfortunate what has happened here. Whatever happens, after the situation here at Attica, a penal system here in the United States and the people who are kept in this out of them will never be the same.
As the inmates surrendered, they were herded into an adjacent yard.
That was a recording from the Attica Rebellion and Massacre of 1971. Today is... Oh, sorry. Let's get my headphones adjusted. Today is August 13th. I mean, August, Black August. September 13th, which is the Attica Riot Uprising Rebellion, began on August 9th. And there was a standoff, and the state troopers, National Guard of New York State Troopers, New York National Guards, and local police retook the prison on this day and murdered several inmates, murdered all of the guards, and I'm having some feedback in my headphones, but I'll suffer for the people, then. Wow, that's weird. Echo. I don't know if you guys hear it on your side. But anyway, it's funny because this is not associated with the Black August. I'm going to have to switch headphones. I can't take this. What in the world? All right. Maybe if I don't move and don't breathe and don't talk, I won't hear that echo and feedback. All right, so let's just have a moment. All right. It's not associated because it happened in September, early September, but the Attica Rebellion always speaks to the same spirit of the larger Black August remembrance and radicalism. This was actually the beginning of what came to be called the prison reform movement. And mostly what they did was just change terms. They used to call incarcerated men and women convicts, and they started calling them inmates. They used to call these places prisons and penitentiaries, and they started calling them correctional facilities. They used to call the prison guards guards, and then they came to call them corrections officers. That's the most long-standing prison reform, which is a change. And I think even that terminology is going back. Oh, this is horrible. I'm sorry to be complaining about my headphones. It's unprofessional, but what do you want from me? But at that time, they also implemented reforms such as education, to the point where you can get everything starting from GED all the way up to your PhD. That started in this era. That was one of the civil rights and black liberation movement concessions that we were able to win from the state, from the white power structure, as it was called in the 60s and 70s. So they had education. They started obligating. Prior to this, the prisons did not respect dietary restrictions, religious dietary restrictions of the inmates. Therefore, you know, you couldn't get an Islamic diet. But in some prison systems now, you can request a Islamic diet where you not only are not fed pork, but you also get halal meat and things of that nature. There was also more recreation, more visitation, routine beatings, and unfair group punishment. So there were a lot of so-called positive reforms. I don't know if that's a oxymoron, because, you know, you're in prison. And I personally am a prison abolitionist. Prisons do not protect society. They just, I think, concentrate and expand, because the vast majority of people who go into prison come out, you know, and they come out severely damaged. I lived in a public housing project, and a lot of ex-offenders, as they now call them, you know, it was a time they I mean, like I said, there's a lot of new technology. It used to be if you ever went to prison, you were a convict. Even in the streets, people would call you a convict. And if you stayed in the same town, you know, a felon or a convict, and because you were convicted of a crime, so you're a convict. But a lot of those guys would come out. You know, they would have a lot of guys got out of prison. They would be very muscular and buff, but their skin would always have like this dull, pallor complexion. A lot of guys I know, when they came out of prison, they would have these skin lesions and various skin rashes. And that's just the physical toll, you know. And unfortunately, I know a lot of people who've been to prison. You know, I have a childhood friend, play cousin, Ricky Kidd, with two D's. Ricky, RickyKidd. Hashtag free Ricky Kidd, who's serving a life sentence without parole for a crime that the prosecutor, the detectives, everyone knows he didn't do. And I had even spoke to years ago. This is back in the late 90s. I had even spoke to a detective. And he knew that I was an activist. Well, I don't think he was a detective. I think he was a policeman. He was off-duty cop. I knew he was a cop. And we used to go. I had a friend who went to Gold's Gym. And a lot of cops used to work out at Gold's Gym. And I would come in as his guest sometime. And I knew this guy was a cop. And I talked to him. And I'm like, yo, y'all got Ricky locked up in there. And the cop basically told me, like, well, you know, he's a bad guy. Whether he did it or not, we know he's a bad guy. You know, and Ricky will tell you, yeah, of course. You know, our mothers were best friends, and they both had the same vices and disease of addiction. So, you know, we all know how it goes. It's kind of a trite story at this point. And, of course, he did his things, but he's not a murderer. And, but anyway, long story short, I know a lot of people who've been to prison. Even under the great reforms, which are all being drawn back, by the way, you know, the education, the vocational, the respecting of people, religious, dietary restrictions, all that's being drawn back. Now, it used to be, because they said it was correction. The original purpose of prison was penance. That's why they call it a penitentiary. You're supposed to show penance for your crime. You're supposed to suffer for your crime. You're supposed to spend time reflecting on what you did, and that in your crime, your sin is what defines you, and you have to show penance. And when you show significant amount of penance, then you will be released back into society. That was the basic idea of it. And they went away from that and say, well, we want to correct people. So if you're committing crimes, obviously you're gone off the path, you know. And there was even some notion that maybe society has a certain level of blame. And so it's society's obligation to correct you, to fix you, to help you. So it went from penitentiary punishment to correction. And it was suggested that your prison time, the amount of time you were incarcerated, was basically the amount of time it would take for you to speak to give justice to the victims of your crime, and to allow you to be healed, to be corrected, to be educated, to be reformed, so that you can re-enter society as a functional member of society. So, you know, we got civilized in the 70s. And how did and this mainly happened because of places like Attica. And what they never associate with Attica, even in some of the best documentaries and books on the Attica Rebellion, they never speak to. Because I have a book, Attica, where it's literally an hour-by-hour breakdown of the rebellion. The book is really well-written, and it talks. I have to post a picture of it online because it's been a while since I read it. But so I can't tell you the offer, but I'll share it online this afternoon. It has an hour by hour from the first moment that the brothers broke out of the cells, took over the cell block, took the hostages, and blow by blow, moment by moment, all the back end negotiations with the Governor Rockefeller and the all the racist National Guards and their comments and quotes, and hour by hour, the gut wrenching detail, the level of torture and summary execution of the rebels, all of that. It breaks it down very well written. So I will share that. But one thing they never ever put, they even left out of that book, is the fact that just a week prior to the Attica uprising, the state had murdered George Jackson. You know, the day of the dragon had come. And many, George Jackson was a legend, and the black guerrilla family within the prison system. George Jackson was politicizing and revolutionizing. He had published, he'd become basically, he was the Mumia of his generation, probably the most recognized and well-known political prisoner in the United States. I got a call. Caller, you're live on the Bro Diallo Show. State your name or alias and where you're calling from.
Hey, what's going on, brother? This is Adolfo.
Hey, what's up, bro?
Jackson, Mississippi.
Hey, it's been a minute since you didn't gave us a holler, man. What's up, bro? That baby keeping you up?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, blame the baby. Yeah, you can use that for the next couple of years now. Anything you don't want to do, hey, you know I just had a baby. It's wonderful. I almost want to have enough kids just so I could do that. Oh, man, I can't be there, brother. You know I just had that baby. What's up, bro?
Yeah, man. Not much. I'm just listening on this Attica stuff you're talking about with Attica and prison reform. Huh. And mentioning these books. It's a real good book. I'm reading it right now, actually, called Blood in the Water, written by this author, Heather Ann Thompson.
Uh-huh.
And it deals with a lot of stuff that the tradition that the other books don't deal with, because she kind of lucked up on this cachet of legal documents that got into the hands of some archives in New York, and she used it. But then after she used it and wrote the book, they made sure that information wasn't going to be available to the public anymore. And it's a real good book. I think it's over 500 pages long.
Wow.
And it deals not only with the rebellion, but the aftermath, the cases, the brutality, the level of sabotage and things that the governor and other authorities engaged in to try to keep the truth of what really was happening in those facilities, not only in Attica, but in other facilities as well. So it's a real good book, and it deals with the murder of George Jackson being one of the catalysts for brothers wanting to rise up in addition to the
abuse. It kind of amazed me how they would always try to distance the Attica uprising from George Jackson's murder.
Right. So, but we seem to be right back at this place again, because I know in Mississippi, folks, they had a hunger strike, and basically, I don't know how violently it was broken up, but I know after these brothers in these facilities, they started doing this hunger strike. All of a sudden, they put this black woman in as the commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Corrections, and all of a sudden she put down this statewide edict that all of these facilities were basically going to be terrorized in some kind of broad sweeps to come up with contraband. So they've been going through all of these prisons and terrorizing these brothers and probably throwing away their legal work. And yeah, they find some contraband, cell phones and knives and all this kind of stuff. But these are violent places, and this is the way that these people keep them to try to maintain the kind of oppression so that people won't rise up. So yeah, man.
Yeah, I worked in Rikers Island for 3 years, and 80% of the prison guards were black. And they would impose some of the most sadistic punishments and tortures on these other black people, you know. And it, you put a badge on these Negroes, and they really thought that meant something, like that encapsulated them in an aura of white acceptance. And it's the same thing. So that's one of the things that really drove home integration, equality, and elevating within this system really harms us more than helps us.
And I remember one time on Facebook when they first, because they had a black MDOC, Mississippi Department of Correction, person that was the head of it, commissioner or whatever, over MDOC before, but he just got popped and got sent to federal prison because he was engaging in steering contracts and getting kickbacks and had gotten over millions of dollars off of this.
What the whiteheads had been doing. He thought he could come in there.
Right. And it was a dragnet of other, like, black doctors were involved in it. They were getting these contracts to do these half-assed medical services for incarcerated people and stuff like this, and cornering the market on it. And so you got, like, all of these new Negro professionals that was involved in it, not just this black MDOC guy. And so they took him out, and then they put this black woman in. And I had some commentary on it, and I was critical of her because before she was there, she had actually worked at the Bureau of Narcotics. And I was representing this woman who had her property seized because her brother was alleged to have been involved in some drug dealing. And he was using her bank account at one time. And she had a check that she had got from an insurance company. I don't know what had happened. I can't recall, but it may have been an accident or something. She put that money in that bank account that her brother used to use sometime, but he didn't have any money in there. But they got wind of it, and they seized this woman's money. And it ended up her getting behind in her mortgage. So I represented her. Usually you charge people up front, but I told her that I wouldn't charge her if we didn't win. So I took the case, and we went and argued, and this Negro who was with the MDOC, now over it, she was on the other side arguing it, And the judge gave them a summary judgment verdict. We didn't even get a chance to get to the facts. They just said basically, oh, her brother was drug dealing. He had used it in the past. So we seizing this as drug money. We had the proof, the evidence that this didn't come from any drug transactions or anything like that. But we didn't even get a chance to get to that point.
And black
so
folks.
I'm just like, man, right. This is sick, man.
That's man. People don't know. We still celebrating. We in the spring, you're gonna go on social media and folks gonna be on there talking about this Negro graduated with an 8.0 GPA and is off to Harvard and is off to Yale and is off. And I've sit and seen Harvard and Yale Negroes do us in, starting from Obama out of Harvard on down. A century ago, one of the first black men to ever get a PhD from Harvard said Harvard has ruined more Negroes than bad whiskey.
Right.
And but we absolutely refuse to learn. And we think these black faces in high places is our very mission in life, is to elevate in a toxic system. So, you know, I'm not even shocked. I've had way too many friends that I even can't even go back and reflect on it. It's too much. Go through this criminal justice system and had black people sit on the bench and level right. some of the, and a lot of this mass incarceration, a lot of these, the expansion of the prison system happened when black people were running these city governments. A lot of these states, you had Dinkins in over Kansas City. You had a black, you had, Wilson Good with the Move organization in Philly. You had David Dinkins reside over. David Dinkins did finally try to stand up to the police department, and they rioted against David Dinkins. The police riot. They were on the subways beating people up and drunk, marching in the street, and they refused to enforce crimes. And there was, I mean, it's an occupying army. The prison, the school, what do they call it? The school to prison pipeline.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Neely Fuller, like the whole planet is a prison. What are you talking about? You know.
Malcolm told us there a long time ago.
Right.
He said, don't be surprised when I say I was in prison, because you in prison too. That's right. What America means, prison.
And we fighting over the top and bottom bunk. That's all, but, you know, many of our so-called conscious black folks trying to get up, trying to get money.
Yeah,
they're trying to get on the top bunk in the cell. That's as far as they want to go.
Yeah, to the point that you raised about many of many black people overseeing this when they were mayors of these cities. It's an excellent book written by James Forman Jr. called Locking Up Our Own,
where
he basically goes through that history. He grounds it a lot in D.C., but he touches on other places too, because that's where he was a public defender at that time in D.C. and really saw that whole thing play out.
And black judges, but,
yeah. So you got a whole regime of these new Negroes that were in positions, judges, sheriffs, police chiefs,
right.
And they still can't get it right. I'm in Jackson, Mississippi now.
They still can't get it right.
They
look, man, the same phenomenon happened on the African continent. When our people rose up and
neo-colonialism.
Exactly. And black people occupied those offices, those governorships. You know, they took over those colonial bureaucracies, and it was business as usual, if things didn't get worse. In South Africa.
I just think if we looked at history, though, like, why are we continue to making the same stupid mistakes? Because I'm saying, they're not even mistakes. These people are doing this intentionally, man. These Negroes that people be celebrating as this or that, they are intentionally trying to fatten their own pockets and advance the interests of their own circle at the detriment of the masses of black people in these cities and states. And they even using the radical rhetoric of the black liberation movement and other progressive movements.
That's
masquerading
the new Negro
as some kind of radical or revolutionary. But people don't study enough, so we let these people get away with this kind of madness.
Yeah. Oh, and look at the time. Look, we're going to have to get into that. Like, I wrote that down. Why we keep making the same mistakes? Why we don't advance? I'm writing that down, and we're going to lead off with that Friday, you know, when I'm back on the air. But I got to get out of here and make way for Band Nation coming up next. Q4 Radio, AM 1680. Anyway, Adolfo, I hope I can get you available this evening for our
I'm going to get on the call.
You got the email. Wonderful. So, yeah, we can get to continue this discussion. We're going to pick up why we can't learn. Why you can't learn, as Muda Baruka says. Why we not learn. So we're going to get into that, and I'll see y'all Friday. Thanks for calling in, bro. I'll be hollering at you a little later. Peace. And that's it for today's Bro Diallo show. Visit the archives, support, and share the show. Peace.